The Queen of Spades. The Queen of Spades stands for secret enmity. Mr. Wimpy sat at a tiny table playing solitaire. He drank lukewarm coffee out of a little cup, and though he did not know how to play the game, knew not one rule as a fact, still kept his eyes intently on the cards, especially the face cards, whose names he whispered aloud. He could barely hear himself think. Hugo van Hogg at a table nearby was telling a good joke, but he muffed the punchline, and a long pause ensued. Mr. Wimpy, however, kept smiling and nodding. Hugo van Hogg and Dr. Blackadder had accompanied our little friend, but had soon left him for the deeper rooms of the house, where even now they were dancing with maidens. A girl in a bodice and skirt with deep flounces bore toward him a plateful of anchovy fillies and capers, but forgot to stop at his table. The hostess stepped from room to room, turning and trailing her dainty skirt. Another lady, whom Mr. Wimpy didn't know, appeared for a moment at a corner down the hallway, and then disappeared. Dr. Blackadder leaped out of twin potted palms, causing the girl in deep flounces to cry, but it was only a joke, and they carried on gaily. At about midnight, Mr. Wimpy put his cards in his pocket, finished the lees of the last cup of coffee, arose and bowed to all concerned, shook hands, put on hat, coat, and gloves, and made his way through the doorway to the vestibule. He said goodbye to Sweetby. He said goodbye to Speed. He said goodbye to Slim. He said goodbye to Mimsy. He said goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. Everyone said, "How nice of you to come. Why don't you come more often?" It was true. Mr. Wimpy had become a recluse, going out rarely, and then usually at 2 or 3 in the morning. At these hours, he would walk uptown or down, back and forth, never as far as the river. He spent most of his last 17 years in bed. That's right. He had received a large sum from the death of an aunt, and the little creature withdrew completely. Even his best friend saw him no more than 2 times a year. Everyone had heard of Mr. Wimpy's modest inheritance. Everyone had heard, too, that he spent his days in bed, bundled up in a long nightgown, sweaters, mufflers, stockings, gloves, and nightcap. When he arose, he usually wore a heavy, fur-lined coat, indoors as well as out. In order to obtain the quiet necessary to him, he was forced to rent the apartments around, above, and below his own. He kept his room sealed as tight as a drum. Heat and ventilation were not permitted, nor were the windows ever opened, for he could not tolerate odors, noise, light, or dust. On the way, who should he run into, do you think? Popeye. Popeye was wobbly on his feet, and his tux was in deep disarray. A lock of his hair fell over his eye, and his fist held the neck of a bottle. And a black mark shone out from his eye like a Y-shaped, three-cornered star. "Sit down and we'll talk," said Popeye to his friend. And seeing him well wrought, Mr. Wimpy went back and sat down. He felt very strange, sitting in greatcoat and hat, expanding target for jeers. But he pulled in his head like a turtle and said not a word. "Excuse me for disturbing you. But until this moment, Mr. Wimpy, I've been dancing with the bride next door. Ever since 10:30. But now I'm in deep disarray." With that, Popeye sat down on the floor with a plop, looked about with surprise, and let his arms hang down. Immediately, Mr. Wimpy stood up, bent over, placed his umbrella on the tiny table, and helped Popeye into a chair. The footman came by with a tray, and Popeye ordered a drink. And then his talk took another turn, in a rather loud voice. "Sparkle Plenty and I were dancing, you see, and in came her husband with a fist, and he struck me. And what do you make of that?" Mr. Wimpy cut himself a slice of wedding cake, stood up, paced about amid the stationary guests, and then returned to his friend at the table. "Did you kiss her? Once? Twice? How many times? In how many places? Were the lights on or off? Was there anyone in the room or not? Was the door open? Was the door closed? Did she invite you? Did you agree? Did she enjoy it? Did you agree? Did you enjoy it? What was she wearing? At the beginning? At the end?" At first, Popeye gazed at his friend in astonishment, and his eyes turned around in his head once or twice. But then, noticing that there was a rumble of noise, much like a husband and retainers approaching from the fire room, and a noise like a hostess and guests approaching in short steps from all directions, he laughed, stood up, and said, "Oh, well, I need a little fresh air." And in a whisper, "Will you help me, Wimpy? I'm a bit wobbly, and everyone is looking at me. I really don't think I can make it alone." "Alone?" echoed Wimpy. "You've lived a charmed life, and it's not over yet." "If Sparkle's husband catches me, my career is ruined, and my features as well," said Popeye. In a loud voice, Wimpy stood up and said, so that all could hear, "I think some fresh air will do us both good. I myself am slightly tipsy. Yes, let's say goodbye and go." So they went to the hostess, nodding and smiling, both arm in arm. Popeye kissed her hand, and she began to laugh. Popeye pulled himself up straight and said, "I'm glad to see you enjoying yourself." Thereupon he bent down to the hand she extended and bit her. She let out a shriek, and a deep red blush came to her neck, bare save for a black velvet ribbon round her throat. Mr. Wimpy took hold of Popeye's elbow and steered him out toward the door. At the foot of the stairs, who should appear, do you think? Sparkle. Her arms were bare, and her cheeks were flushed, and her hair was in deep disarray. Mr. Wimpy could see she had drunk some wine, and in the weak lamplight which filled the whole stairwell, he could see her lips trembling as well. "I'll be waiting for you, don't forget, on the corner of Ridgecrest." And with that, she put his left hand on her breast. Popeye sighed and felt her breast. Mr. Wimpy tried to speak, but it was no use, for by now they were deep in each other, of course, and each was kissing the other by turns. There were eyes all about, in windows and doors, and each toothy grimace resembled a smile. "We shall make good use of my friend here tonight," said the young man, ablaze, and the girl sang out, "Please do! I'll be forever grateful to you." "No fear, no fear, no matter for thought," sang Popeye. Then he put his tongue on hers, and she put her tongue on his. "Let's go, let's go," whispered Wimpy in short gasps. "Remember, my friend, who's coming for you."
"You're right, of course," laughed Popeye, turning on one foot and making a fancy bow. "We've postponed our parting too long as it is. We're expected elsewhere, my friends, I'm afraid."
And with that, they dashed into the street. On the frozen snow, one has to take short steps, and they wobbled indeed. Hardly were they outside than Popeye evidently began to feel very gay. He raised his arms, shouted out boastfully, "We shall see! We shall see!" But just then he looked back and caught sight of the guests at the window, grinding their teeth. "Oh, my God," cried he aloud. "Hold me up, Wimpy. I must make a graceful exit." Mr. Wimpy gripped him around the scruff of the neck and made off down the street in a trot.
"Are they coming?"
"Not yet." "No care, no care, no matter for thought," said Mr. Popeye.
Mr. Wimpy held his head bent, did not reply, but his smile, somewhat qualified, did it better by half. On turning into the parking lot, Popeye realized that he had not come in a car, that for a fact he had no car.
"My friend, I shall have to depend on you, and I know I can, too, to get me to my Ridgecrest rendezvous."
"Rendezvous?" said Wimpy, as if he had not heard it all, but had been concerned with his own affairs during the scene at the door.
"Yes," said Popeye, "rendezvous. I plan to meet Sparkle at the corner of Ridgecrest and Vine. If you will take me there, I shall be forever grateful to you." "Of course, of course," said Mr. Wimpy, and he whistled a happy tune.
When they arrived at Mr. Wimpy's open space, they found a bicycle turned in a rack, held tight in positions as rigid as space would permit.
"This is mine, too, and a fine one, too," said the plump little man in the derby. But Popeye cried out aloud, "A bicycle? What the devil is this? How can I go to my lady love on a bicycle, beg pardon, sir?" And he waddled about with the sheerest astonishment and sat down on the drive with a plop.
But the guests had come out of the house, with the hostess and husband at their head. They peered over cars and laughed and growled, and good times were had by all. Someone had a bat,
another a cane, and they brandish them up in the air. Oh, my God, they are following me. I must not be followed. And Popeye looked up to his friend for help. For that, Mr. Wimpy bent over, took up his burden, threw the fellow, top hat and all, quite lightly on the back, and stepped on the bike. Soon they were sailing out of the drive and out down the pavement as fast as can be. "Well, what do you think of the catch I've made?" cried Popeye with a shout of sorts to the night. "In the porch light, one couldn't distinguish anything," said Wimpy, quite dryly, pedaling over the pavement.
"Are they following us?"
Popeye asked, panting hard. And in answer, Wimpy cried, "Yes." Now the guests had taken to taxis and autos. In fact, they seemed intent on making a game of it. I'm ruined if they catch up with us. Drive faster. Surely you can if you try. And for God's sake, keep your head and remember directions, said Mr. Popeye. Mr. Wimpy's up and down motions grew swifter and swifter. He slid down an alley deserted by all and up Silver by Parnell through Dover. He even tried flying through lawns and parks and once almost hit a tree. Circle about for a while till you lose our fair friends and then we can head back to Ridgecrest.
Yes.
The streets were winding, the lights were poor, and even the doors of the bars were closed. The only things out were stray dogs and now and then creatures in derbies and greatcoats who looked in at the lamplights and doffed their top hats to the sky. When Wimpy passed them, he would doff his top hat, but say not a word. First an enormous creature with a hat over his eyes, then a parking lot attendant without a left hand. Then a girl with a limp and a long, stringy hair. All three appeared to be talking to someone, but there was no one, far or near.
Who are they? Cried Popeye.
Who are who?
These creatures you just doffed your hat to, you know.
Whoa, you know.
No, I don't, said Popeye. Tell me.
Two bachelors I meet every night on my walks. Solitaries, you see. I don't know them, of course. We've not said a word to each other. They stood on opposite sides of the street, these solitaries, and even in postures as rigid as theirs, hands clasped behind their backs, feet spread wide apart, they retained a gracious effect, a conscious gentleness, Popeye recalled, on the faces of obedient children.
"They're such little guys," cried Popeye with a laugh. "Ha! I could pick one up in my hand and pet him."
"Certainly so, certainly so," said Mr. Wimpy.
"It doesn't matter if they see me like this. Those creatures can't hurt my career."
Mr. Wimpy, in answer, kept smiling and nodding. A wind from the mountains blew down on them then, full of snow, cold as pins and needles.
"It's a quarter to one," said Popeye. Soon he began to shudder in earnest. "How sorry I am I brought no coat. Let me press my head up against yours for a bit." And since Wimpy said nothing, he did it. "It's time you had a girl of your own," said Popeye, rather close to his ears and low.
"Yes, yes," said Mr. Wimpy, smiling and nodding. "I believe that. I don't doubt it."
"There's nothing so nice as a kiss after dark," continued the sailor-turned-gentleman, and with that fellow shuddering in earnest. "Turn around, let's go back. This is far enough. We've lost them. I'm catching my death of cold. I hate it. It's lonely and cold. There's nothing nice as a nice round breast," cried Popeye to keep warm.
But his lips now had trouble forming each word.
"Hold on tight," said Wimpy. "I'll show you my home. I want you to meet some friends of mine." "No, no, 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 no. We haven't time. I've got a date. I've never taken this road to Ridgecrest before." But just then a bump hit Popeye, and he reeled back off his seat on the ground. He tried to get up, but fell down again.
"Sheer ice," said Mr. Wimpy, and felt his friend's knee. "Broken or frozen," he said with a smile, in order to cheer Popeye up. He got off his bike and knelt down by the man, and soon he was stroking his knee. He passed it up and down Popeye's cheekbone and then
laid his palm on his cheek. Ah, you've hurt yourself, huh? Well, it's icy. One must be so careful here, Popeye. Does your head ache? No. Oh, you seem to be frozen quite bad. Mr. Wimpy, with a deft shift of his weight, took the man by the arms and sat him on the bike, head wagging loudly. Hold tight. Up ahead, there's our destination. And he warmed Popeye's hands between his. There were not many houses now, and the road was dark, jagged, on the edge of a forest. Occasionally a solitary will appear in a street corner or on the steps of a house that is dark. They laugh to themselves, fiddle with sticks, even spit on the ground as they go by. But when Wimpy would pass by, tipping his top hat, they'd smile so simply, like gentle, obedient children.
This is not the ridge crest I meant, mumbled Popeye weakly when he saw a ski range in the distance and slopes rising around him. We postponed returning too long. It's too late. She won't wait. It's too cold.
But Mr. Wimpy did not hear him. He stood up on his pedals like a horseman in stirrups and laughed a laugh of sheer joy. To the left was a ski range far in the distance. To the right rose a frozen cluster of pines. For miles the peaks rose and the wind sifted their flanks, and a whirlpool of wind sucked the snow away. Down the long slope the snow glistened fast, a dazzle of frozen sparks.
Am I dead or alive? Whispered Popeye through a beard of ice fastened over his mouth.
Ridge crest at last, cried Wimpy at last.
But his friend didn't budge or look round at all. Nothing could be heard far and wide but the wind and the pinions and Mr. Wimpy's gay little whistle. Mr. Wimpy stooped with a jolt, stopped, and Popeye slipped off behind, fell with a plop in the snow.
Get off for a while and relax, Popeye, if you wish. Could you imagine an hour before you'd have ridden with me way up here?
But Popeye did not answer, and in fact was not making very good company. His best bib and tucker were torn, and his dickie, rolled up, revealed a bare chest to the snow. His cap had fallen in snow far from him, and he made no effort to get it.
Not everybody is made for these heights, but you and I, said Wimpy, doffing his hat to the sky.
Nothing could be heard across the open plains but the wind and the pinions and his little whistle far and wide.